that starts as a match made in heaven can sometimes end in hell.
There's only a handful of people that you get classified as being this cruel.
The family home becomes a house of horrors.
We have a dead man, a woman who's not crying, and nothing's missing. That looks like murder to me.
A battered wife takes her revenge.
They wait until the monster goes to sleep, and then they take care of business.
And a nurse turns executioner.
How can a person have done what she did and carry it out in that cold-blooded way?
Until death do us part has a whole new meaning when you're married to murder. In the dead of night, a terrified wife makes a desperate plea for help.
Someone's breaking into my house and he's fighting with my husband! You can't go up there! It's my kids!
This one fatal night, a thief becomes a killer.
Blood all over the place.
A family is destroyed.
An intruder had broken in the house and shot her husband.
And a woman's deadly secret is exposed. In Alexandria, Kentucky, local beauty Amy Bosley is living the high life. After years of searching, she's finally found her Mr. Right.
Someone who could come into her life, give her what she wanted, and she didn't have to give much back.
Oh, you're so proud of you.
Amy Bosley married her husband for money. Everything he touched turned to gold.
Bob Bosley runs a lucrative roofing business, and he's a pillar of the community.
He would often donate his services to churches to install steeples.
As a hard-working Christian man, Bob is proud that he provides everything his family could want.
Ready? Smile.
Am I blocking?
But he's gravely underestimating what it will take to satisfy his wife.
Big house, big cars, money in the bank. And she really didn't have to work if she didn't want to, but that's not enough. That is not enough for her. She wants it all.
Bob Bosley is completely unaware of the insatiable greed driving his wife. No matter how much he provides, Amy will always want more.
That's narcissism. They believe they deserve more than what they've been given in life, and they're gonna take it.
Hey, honey.
Skills.
You want me to do your tax?
You know I'm no good at this stuff. You know the longer I spend up a ladder, the more money we'll make.
When Bob innocently asks Amy to manage the company accounts, she sees an opportunity.
He trusted her completely, and she completely took advantage of him.
Amy begins to see all this money that the business has to pay, by law, the IRS.
Amy hatches a plan to deceive her husband.
Write a check to the IRS, put it in the books. Bob would see it in the books, but she would never send the check to the IRS. Instead, she would withdraw that money herself and put it somewhere.
Amy was having an affair with Bob's money.
And it's a passionate affair. Within a few months, Amy steals over $100,000.
It took on a nature of its own, and it became a monster.
But Amy isn't just stealing from her husband. By committing tax fraud, she's also robbing the U.S. government. And they're not so easy to fool.
The IRS started to look into this, thinking Mr. Bosley wasn't paying his taxes. They started sending out letters. What they didn't know was the letters weren't going to Robert Bosley. They were going to a secret P.O. box that Amy had set up to receive those letters.
Business is booming for Bob. He believes the family finances are secure.
While Bob was climbing the business ladder, Amy was climbing into his business accounts.
Amy is bleeding her family dry. She's now stolen over $1 million. But with no tax payments and no contact from Bob Bosley, the IRS believes he is committing the crime. And one day, they finally pay a visit.
I'll just get right to the point.
Sure.
I'm investigating your husband, Bob Bosley, for tax evasion.
I can't believe this.
If it's not cleared up, he could face a jail term.
Oh my God.
But even with the threat of prison, Amy keeps stealing.
No one's gonna find out. I'm gonna take this money, I'm gonna hide it. Why? Because I deserve it. I deserve this.
But there are two things you can't avoid in life: death and taxes.
Oh, yes. Hello. Has my husband contacted you?
No, I'm afraid he hasn't.
Oh, really? I can't believe it.
I'm afraid I'm gonna have to take this matter to the police.
No, 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 that's not necessary. My husband is here right now. I'm just going to get him for you.
She's smarter than the police. They're never going to figure her out. That's what she's thinking in her mind.
Hello, Bob Bosley speaking. How may I help you?
She sounded like Kermit the Frog.
Posing as her husband, Amy agrees to a meeting the following day.
If Bob sat down with those IRS agents, he was going to become aware for the first time that almost $2 million in taxes had not been paid by Amy. That his wife, the mother of his children, was a thief.
But there's no way Amy's going to let that meeting happen. Amy Bosley is a thief and a liar. She's defrauding the government and deceiving her unsuspecting husband. Now, she's about to become a murderer.
This was a man she once loved.
A war between these two that she won. Amy completes the job by firing 6 shots into the man she married. two kids are obviously awake in the next room, scared, hugging their pillows, shaking. Now she's got to cover her tracks.
What's your emergency?
Someone is breaking into my house and he's fighting with my husband. I don't know what to do. No! You can't go up there. It's my kids.
Police are on the way. She needs to act fast.
She goes downstairs. She breaks the window from the outside. She also opens drawers and cabinets in the kitchen and kind of throws things around.
Amy tries to make it look like an intruder has ransacked the house.
She caused a panic in the community by saying an intruder had broken in the house and shot her husband.
Reporter Jim Hanna was one of the first on the scene. Like the detectives, he wasn't convinced by Amy Bosley's performance.
I saw him standing by the bed. I tried to stop him. I tried to grab the gun. And look, I can see the hands where he scratched me.
Her story didn't add up from the beginning. There were no footprints from the home. No one saw anyone suspicious in the area, despite a massive search.
Inside the house, things are looking very suspicious.
It looked like a made-for-TV crime scene. The cabinets under the sink are open. There's nothing under a sink that is of any value to a thief. As cops begin to scour through the house, they find two bullet casings near Bob's body. They find more shell casings. Where? In the washing machine. Now, why would a thief leave shell casings in a washing machine?
In the following days, investigators get a call from the IRS and learn about the $1.7 million Bob Bosley owes in unpaid taxes.
So this now paints an entire other picture for the police. Motive. 1.7 million motives for Amy Bosley to shoot her husband.
The case is mounting against Amy, but there's still not enough evidence to convict her of murder.
I think the most shocking element of the crime was that this woman shot her husband with the children sleeping in the room next door.
Now, I'm going to have to ask you a few questions, okay?
Amy thinks she planned the perfect crime.
So tell me everything that happened.
She had spiked the kids' drink so they would sleep through this, but I don't know anyone who could sleep through a 9mm gun being fired multiple times. And the children didn't.
And I heard this loud bang.
What the children heard that night would bring the whole charade crashing down.
Then I heard glass smashing, things being thrown around.
You heard glass smashing after the shots?
Yes.
They were absolutely sure that they heard the window breaking downstairs after they heard the gunshots.
Faced with this new evidence against her, Amy finally pleads guilty.
Amy Bosley married her husband for money. And she killed him for the same reason.
Amy is sentenced to 20 years, but she takes a secret with her. She refuses to reveal where the money is.
If we just look ahead, maybe. You can see her in the middle of the night some night with a flashlight and a shovel all by herself, looking around, digging in that hole, coming up with that shoebox full of money, and just laughing all the way to the bank.
Amy Bosley will be eligible for parole in 2020. Until then, her secret treasure lies waiting. It's been a big day for Joyce Chant. She's turning in for the night. After years of nightmares, at last, a quiet night in with her husband.
Sometimes the abuser ends up on the wrong side of a gun.
It was cold-blooded murder.
In the outer suburbs of Sydney, Australia, it's a regular night for the Chant family. But for sons Jamie, Craig, and young Scott, family life holds a dark secret.
Wayne Chant was a heavy drinker, heavy smoker, and extremely violent. His entire family were deeply afraid of him. He would hit his wife badly. He would backhand her, he would throw her to the ground, he would hurt her. He was also violent to their three kids. It was a messy, dysfunctional, deeply, deeply unhappy household.
Crime reporter Jordan Baker has covered domestic abuse cases before. But the Joyce Chant story is the most shocking she's ever seen.
How she managed to endure so many years of such brutality from her husband is quite remarkable.
The fear that abuse victims suffer is when the beating's going on. Oftentimes they actually don't know if they're going to survive a beating, and the violence does escalate.
One night, Joyce Chant finally reaches her breaking point.
You want to be good again, do you? Oh, that's your age for everything, isn't it? Your son's locked up in there because of you, and all you can think about is bashing his mother.
Do you want to have your face smashed in again, do you?
After all the beatings, after all the abuse, she became a hard, determined woman.
Bash me all you like, but you'll never shut me up!
What else do you say about
that? You're gonna kill me, are you? You're gonna go get your gun, are you? You're gonna
destroy!
Wayne pulls out a gun.
Are you gonna shoot me, are you?
Tonight, the battered wife turns the tables.
He falls.
What was that?
I don't know, Rose. Don't worry, just watch the video.
Who did you grab?
Scott, mate. No, okay? You check it out in a minute. Just keep watching.
Her children have been sitting there. They've heard the gunshot. They've got a pretty good idea of what's happened to their father. But they're terrified of their mother now too, so they don't say anything. She wraps him in their bed sheet and leaves him there.
As the nights pass, Joyce sleeps in the same room as her dead husband's body. To the children, the house is strangely quiet, and there is a foul smell.
The body is starting to smell, it's starting to decompose.
Joyce tells family and friends Wayne left her for another woman. But one person doesn't buy it. Wayne's mother, Dorothy.
What do you want?
What have you done with my son?
I told you, he never come back from Bathurst. Probably shacked up with some tart.
There's no way he would get up and go without contacting me.
Well, he's proved you wrong, hasn't he?
I want to see the boy.
Dorothy Chant is a wily old woman. Her daughter-in-law is hiding something, and it's closer than she could imagine.
For almost 2 weeks, the body sits in the bedroom.
But Joyce is in no hurry to bury her husband. She's not done with him yet. Joyce Chant is sleeping with a dead man. It's her husband, Wayne.
Brutal men, married to women that they beat, frequently end up shot in the head.
Her young children are too scared to ask where their father is.
Wayne's body stayed in the home up to 14 days.
Joyce spends her nights planning what she's going to do with her husband's corpse. She comes up with a brutal, calculated plan.
Joyce raises the axe and strikes him once, then brings up the axe and strikes him again. Quickly is overcome with so many years of anger and hatred and frustration. Soon she's cut up his leg, his other leg, and she chops up his arm, his other arm. She chops off both his hands. Now, in their backyard, where they've raised their children, where they've spent many years of married life together. She hacks his head off.
Rest stop south of Sydney, a driver pulls over for a smoke and makes a gruesome discovery. A human torso. And it's only the beginning.
They found a leg in some mangroves in Sydney. A few weeks after that, they found an arm that was barely recognisable as a human arm because obviously it had been cut off from the shoulder, but also the hands had been cut off.
To investigators, it's a horrific murder that may never be solved.
Because, of course, then they didn't have DNA and there was no head, so they couldn't use dental records. There was no hand, so they couldn't use fingerprint records. It became one of Sydney's great mysteries of the early 90s.
Joyce hides the head and the hands. She knows they are the only means of identifying Wayne's body.
They put his head and his hands in an ice cooler.
Joyce forces her eldest son, Jamie, to take part in this final annihilation of Wayne Chant's identity.
This is a man that Joyce married, slept with, and had children with. And this was a man that was a father to the son doing this.
Jamie does what he's told. With his father gone, it's now his mother that he fears. He promises to keep quiet and stick to Joyce's story.
She would tell people that she thought he had run off with some other woman and was living in some other town.
but Wayne's mother, Dorothy, is sure Joyce is lying. She continues to pressure the police.
Oh, it's Dr. Chung here. I'm ringing up to find out. Have you got any more information on my son?
Unfortunately not, Dorothy. Nothing's changed since the last time I spoke to you.
Look, he wouldn't just get up and go without calling his mother.
Until we find some more information, there's nothing we can do.
But you need to get this out of his wife. She's the one that knows the truth.
Yes, but according to our information, he's run off with another woman.
She's lying! She's done something to him!
Dorothy, if anything changes, I promise you I'll be the first to call.
Don't you dare hang up.
No one's listening to Dorothy for now.
It seems like the perfect crime. No one was asking any questions anymore.
But after 10 years, Jamie Chant finally breaks his silence.
You don't want to hear this.
He confesses to his girlfriend.
Dad didn't go missing. Mom killed him.
One day, police got a piece of information that changed everything. A young woman presented to a police station. She identified herself as an ex-girlfriend of Jamie Chant. And she told them that he had confessed to her not only that his mother had killed his father, but that she'd chopped up his body.
Why didn't you go to the police?
She would have killed me too.
With this information, detectives realize that Dorothy Chant was right all along. They believe they've finally solved the body parts cold case. But they need scientific proof.
Dorothy was a fiery old woman. She kept hounding the police.
Luckily for them, Dorothy kept fighting till the day she died.
Dorothy was also a clever woman. As her dying wish, she insisted that police take a vial of her blood so that even from the grave, she would be able to get justice for her son. So they took tissue from the body and the blood sample Dorothy had left before she died, and they sent them to the United States for some advanced DNA testing. It's a perfect match.
15 years after her crime, police charge Joyce Chant with her husband's murder. She pleads guilty to manslaughter, claiming self-defense.
Joyce may have believed what she was doing was the right thing for a mother to do to save herself and her three sons from this tyrant. But really, it was a cold-blooded murder and something that destroyed not only her life, but the lives of her entire family.
Prosecutors accept the plea of manslaughter. Joyce Chant is sentenced to only 5.5 years in prison. Some women will do anything to find a husband. Others will do anything to lose one.
I can't imagine someone doing that to someone that they supposedly loved.
But what looks like burning passion is actually ice cold and calculated.
It was a cruel and unusual way to die.
Morgantown, West Virginia, 2005. Former star cheerleader Michelle Michael loves being the center of attention.
Michelle Michael is a very narcissistic person. For the narcissist, life is all about them and how do they look to the outside world. Everything had to be perfect, but it wasn't.
Right. 28-year-old Michelle is married, but she's looking for a new man. She wants a richer one.
Michelle Michael's standard of morals was very lax, and she slept with a lot of people during her life.
At the hospital where she works as a nurse, Michelle has her sights fixed on a handsome young doctor.
Give me a J, give me an I, give me an M, give me an M, give me a Y.
Jimmy Michael.
Jimmy was a good guy. He was definitely one of the good guys. Always looking out for someone else. Always wanting to help.
But it's not just Jimmy's charm and good looks that Michelle is attracted to.
She was attracted to his ability to make money.
With Jimmy on her arm, Michelle knows she'll be the envy of Morgantown.
So do you play football yourself?
And for Jimmy, Michelle is his dream come true.
I thought so. You have a very physique.
Jimmy had a thing for cheerleaders, and Michelle Michael was probably his perfect girl.
So what do I need to do to get another cheer?
Well, you need to do something to earn it.
What might that be?
I'm sure you can do something.
Michelle knows how to get what she wants.
Sure, I think so.
And it doesn't take her long.
Pretty soon, there was a lot of rumors going around the hospital that they were having some kind of affair.
Michelle dumps her husband and begins her new life with Jimmy.
Michelle and Jimmy get married. He's doing well financially. They buy the dream house. Michelle starts to decorate it, get it just the way she wants, that whole image thing. Image was everything to Michelle.
Michelle and Jimmy look like the perfect married couple, for now.
After they'd been married a couple of years, Jimmy decided he wanted to start his own business.
Jimmy leaves his job at the hospital to open a private practice.
Well, your eyes are sparkling.
It's something he's wanted to do for years, and he puts his all into the new venture.
And I'll see you tomorrow.
But according to author John Glatt, Michelle wasn't so enthusiastic.
He wasn't making the money that he was making before because he was kind of growing the business, and Michelle became very unhappy about that.
Well, look, he's not the most skilled kid on the park.
And it's not just the money. With Jimmy focused on his new business, Michelle is no longer the center of attention.
What's that you're drinking there, Bob?
Scotch.
In a Jim Beam glass.
It's a man drinking scotch.
That's all you guys had.
And she shows her unhappiness by openly flirting in front of him.
He had talked to me about trying to get Shelly to go to church with him and rededicate herself to the marriage. I don't think things were working out that way.
Michelle is out of control. As soon as Jimmy's back is turned, she starts an affair with one of his employees. And she does it in their marital bed.
I think he had tried.
Close friend Reggie Hours says Jimmy had no idea why his marriage was failing.
He could honestly say he had tried to make things work.
One day, he learns the truth.
Jimmy was tipped off to Michelle's affair by someone sending an anonymous note.
They put it in her mailbox saying, "Keep your whore off my husband."
Changed.
Been shopping again.
Yes.
We can't afford this crap.
Well, you've got your own business, and I can't afford to buy new underwear.
Who are you buying this stuff for, anyway?
Get out.
It's not for me. We haven't had sex in months. Are you cheating on me?
No.
Are you cheating on me?
Get out.
This marriage is over.
But there's no way Michelle is going to let Jimmy leave her. she knows the community would side with him, and her image would be left in tatters.
She wanted out, but she wanted sympathy on the way. She didn't want the wrath or the disdain of the community for leaving such a nice guy.
Michelle sees a different way to end the marriage. One that lets her walk away with all the sympathy she desires. Michelle Michael is a nurse who cares about herself.
She's got to be the coldest, cruelest person I've ever met in my life.
It takes a murderer to kill a man. It takes a monster to make him suffer.
In her role as a nurse, Michelle had access to and knowledge of a variety of drugs that could be used to save lives.
Michelle steals a drug called rocuronium. She knows exactly what one prick of this needle will do.
Once you give that drug, you paralyze every muscle in your body. And your diaphragm is a muscle that controls your breathing. So the diaphragm stops working, you stop breathing. Still see, you still know what's going on around you, but you can't move, you can't breathe, you can't talk, and you lay there and suffocate.
Bye-bye, sweetheart. Pleasant dreams.
It really is like being buried alive, struggling to breathe, knowing that you need assistance and aren't going to get it, but you are awake and aware of what's happening.
Michelle knows it will take more than 10 minutes for Jimmy to die.
And you can imagine how slow those minutes were.
Michelle leaves her husband to suffer a slow, lonely, and agonizing death.
She shut the door and went off to work to create an alibi.
When Shelley got to work, she seemed to be making a big point out of letting people know that she was there.
Her alibi established, Michelle puts the next stage of her plan into action.
She leaves work, gets in her car, drives home, and sets the house on fire, goes back to work, and waits.
Michelle tries to act normal as she waits anxiously for the fire department to call.
About 10:30, there's a call that her house is on fire, and she goes, she makes a big scene, and she screams, "My husband, my husband," and she drives off to the house, which is already burning.
Michelle arrives home to a dramatic scene, ready to play her part.
I live here. Where's my husband?
But she doesn't quite pull it off. Witnesses are confused by her behavior.
Her reactions and just her general demeanor were unusual and odd to them and did not portray a sense of loss and distress that you would normally expect.
And inside, fire investigators are also confused. Something's not right.
The body was in a strange position. It was like a little baby, like it had gone to sleep. It wasn't like he'd fought his way out or tried to fight his way out of a fire, which made people suspicious.
How can he not get out of a bedroom? How can he not move 10 feet to get out of a fire?
Jimmy's body is burned beyond recognition. Amazingly, an autopsy can still be carried out. A few days later, the horrifying truth is revealed.
Jim Michael was dead before the fire started because there was no soot in his lungs. There was nothing in his airways that would have shown that he was breathing in smoke.
Forensic examiners don't find smoke, but they do find a smoking gun. Rock uranium.
Jimmy's dad had called me up. He had gotten a copy of the autopsy report. He said, what is rock uranium? My heart sank. How do you tell a parent, someone that loved their kid as much as they did, that their son was paralyzed and lay there and suffocated?
Michelle Michael is now the prime suspect. Police know she has access to rock uranium. And they have security camera footage of her leaving the hospital to set the fire.
I never left the hospital grounds.
Well, that's not what your neighbor says.
Michelle denies everything.
We have an eyewitness who saw you leave the house and drive away. You're gonna tell me she's lying like the security cameras?
She must be. I never left the hospital grounds.
But there's enough evidence to make an arrest. And after a long trial, Michelle Michael is convicted of first-degree murder.
Many people have asked about this case. How can a person have done what she did? How could anyone plan to kill their spouse and carry it out in that cold-blooded way?
Something's missing in her. You know, she's not like a normal person.
It's just evil. There's no other way to put it. It's just pure evil.
Michelle Michael is sentenced to life. She maintains her innocence and is appealing her sentence. But Jimmy's friend Reggie is determined she'll never be released.
I still miss him. Still miss him. God willing, I'll be alive and I can go to her appeals and tell him the things that I know and tell them how cruel she was, and hopefully they'll deny every one of them.
For Michelle Michael, narcissist extraordinaire, life was all about her. She's got a lot of time to think about that now.
These deadly women turned their marital beds into death beds. They promised to love, honor, and obey. But they murdered instead. Amy Bosley's greed drove her to the ultimate betrayal. Joyce Chant killed a monster and became a monster herself. And Michelle Michael preferred a clinical killing to a messy divorce. Their husbands thought they were married for life. They soon found out they were married to murder.